Today is observed as the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur. Yesterday was observed as the appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Namami Haridasam tam Chaitanyam tam Chattat Prabhum Samstitam Apiyan Murtim Shvanke Kritva Nanartayaha. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Haridas Thakur and his master Sri Chaitanya Dev, who danced with the body of Haridas Thakur on his lap. In this chapter, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Amrit Prabhubhasya, writes as follows. In this chapter, Haridas Thakur gave up his body with the consent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the Lord himself personally performed the funeral ceremony and carried the body of Haridas to the sea. He personally entombed the body of Haridas Thakur, covered it with sand, and erected a platform on that site. After taking bath in the sea, he personally begged prasadam of Jagannath from shopkeepers and distributed prasadam to the assembled devotees. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Daya Maya Jaya Dvaita Priya Nityananda Priya Jaya. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is very merciful and who is very dear to Advaita Acharya and to Lord Nityananda. Jaya Srinivasa Swara Haridasa Nata Jaya Garadhara Priya Swarupa Prananata. All glories to the master of Sri Srinivas Thakur. All glories to the master of Haridas Thakur. All glories to the dear master of Vidadhar Pandit, and all glories to the master of the life of Swarup Damodar. Jaya Kashi Priya Jagadananda Paraneshwar Jaya Rupa Sanatana Raghunatha Eshwar. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya, who is very dear to Kashi Mishra. He is the Lord of the life of Jagadananda and the Lord of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Raghunatha Das Goswami. Jaya Gora Deha Krishna Swayam Bhagavan Kripakari Deha Prabhu Ija Padadan. All glories to the transcendental form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Lord, kindly give me shelter at your lotus feet by your causeless mercy. I'm going to read that again. All glories to the transcendental form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Lord, kindly give me shelter at your lotus feet by your causeless mercy. Jaya Nityananda Chandra Jaya Chaitanya Rapran Tomara Chandra Chanara Vinda Bhakti Deha Dan. All glory to Lord Nityananda, who is the life and soul of Sri Chaitanya. My dear Lord, kindly give me engagement in devotional service at your lotus feet. Jaya Jaya Dvaita Chandra Chaitanya Arya Swachanani Bhakti Deha Jaya Dvaita Charya. All glories to Advaita Charya, who is treated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a superior due to his age and respectability. Please give me engagement in devotional service at your lotus feet. Jaya Gora Bhakta Gana Gora Yandra Pran Sava Bhakta Mili Mora Bhakti Deha Dan. All glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the Lord is their life and soul. All of you kindly bestow devotional service upon me. Jaya Rupa Sanatana Jiva Raghuna Raghunatha Gopala Chaya Morana. All glories to Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, and Gopal Bhatt Goswami, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They are all my masters. I am writing this narration of the pastimes and attributes of the Lord by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. I do not know how to write properly, but I am purifying myself by writing this description. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thus resided at Jagannath Puri with his personal devotees and engaged and enjoyed the congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. In the daytime, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu engaged in dancing and chanting and in seeing the temple of Lord Jagannath. At night, in the company of his most confidential devotees, such as Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar Goswami, he tasted the nectar of the transcendental mellows of Sri Krishna's pastimes. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very happily passed his days in this way at Neelachala Jagannath Puri. Feeling separation from Krishna, he exhibited many transcendental symptoms all over his body. Day after day, the symptoms increased, and at night they increased even more. All these symptoms, such as transcendental anxiety, agitation, and talking like a madman, were present, just as they are described in the Shastra. So generally, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is divided in three sections, Adi, Madhya, and Antya. It means just that, the beginning, the middle, and the end. However, there are other divisions about the Lord's pastimes. And one of those divisions is taken in two. The Lord in Navadvipa and then the Lord in Neelachala and Jagannath Puri. Again, sometimes the division is taken in four divisions. And they are periods of 12 years. And this particular pastime is manifesting in the last quarter of the Lord's Leela, his last 12 years. In his first 12 years, he was a student, he was a child, he was a mischievous child, all these things, his youthful past, childhood pastimes. Then, in the second division, his pastimes in youth, his higher education, his embracing his marriage, entering grihastha life, his accepting guru and initiation from Ishwara Puri, and his manifesting Sankirtan movement in Navadvipa. You follow? Yeah. So then, after leaving Navadvipa, taking sannyas, and leaving Navadvipa, he went to Puri. And shortly thereafter, he toured South India. Shortly thereafter, again, he went to Vrindavan. And for a period of about 6 years, he moved around in India, South India, North India, and so forth. And then in the second part of that 12-year period, he stayed at Puri all the time. And he observed all the festivals of Jagannath, and particularly he observed the Rath Yatra festival of Lord Jagannath. Every year, and all the devotees would gather, and then that completes about the third 12-year period. Then there's the last 12 years, because Mahaprabhu manifests his presence in the world for 48 years. So then the last 12 years. So during all the, from his earliest childhood all the way up to this period, he showed his devotees many wonderful transcendental pastimes exhibited with his devotees. And at different times he manifested himself even in different forms, transcendental forms, showing them beyond any question of a doubt, he is indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahaprabhu manifested many transcendental symptoms of ecstasy, performed his Sankirtan movement, and so forth. And as his Leela increased, then the Lord's ecstasies increased. For example, he was always in great ecstasy. It is said that when he traveled in South India and other places, he was always in great ecstasy of love of God. But when he went to Vrindavan, so first, when Mahaprabhu is in ecstasy of love of God, what is that? Can we compare our own feelings in chanting Hare Krishna and our own sometimes some emotion? Can it be compared? Probably not. His average ecstasy, his average ecstatic feelings were far superior to any human being, especially like ourselves. Maybe some of his great devotees, they also had some much, much higher feelings, but even they would say, it's not possible to reach to the level of his emotion, his feeling. Because his feeling is called Mahabhav. There are divisions of bhakti up to prema, in which bhava is the preliminary stage. But after prema, there are again divisions of prema, in which another state of bhava also manifests, and then after that, the state of Mahabhava. These are explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and some other books, Rupa Goswami, Ujjvala Nila Mani, and a few other books. These things are explained there. So, the living entities can experience prema, up to prema, and then the divisions of prema are also there, up to higher type of devotees. They come in the second level of bhava, which is after prema, is sneha, mana, anurag, bhav, and then mahabhav. So, the higher type of devotees, like Chandravali, many eternal devotees in Vrindavan, even opposition to Srimati Radharani, their camp, Radharani's camp, they may go up to this second level bhav. But mahabhav, that is exclusively the domain of Srimati Radharani. Even many eternal residents in Vrindavan, they cannot experience the mahabhav. But they experience the drops of nectar, the shower of nectar that comes from this mahabhav. Like if there is a fountain and you stand next to it, it may sprinkle out. Like in Delhi and North Indian places, in summer season they set off the fountains and everybody goes to that area because the wind blows and that whole part becomes cool. Everyone takes benefit of that fountain. So the fountain of prema in the stage of Mahabhava, that is Srimati Radharani. And when Mahabhava is in being manifested, then those who are the servants, associates, they're in that proximity, they will experience this, it is called vicariously, indirectly. They will have some experience. But it is not directly their experience. Actually, love for Krishna is not yours. It is something like sunlight that comes. If you position yourself, you can bask in the sun. If you hide yourself, you don't get the benefit of the sun. The sun comes in directly through this window. That would be like the love of the mortal world, you see. It is indirect. It's a reflection. This is not directly the sunlight. It's just bouncing and coming in a different way. Then, if we go out of this sheltered existence, you know, which is like Maya, and we expose ourselves to Krishna, that is Saranagati, then directly the light will come and shine on us. And that light comes from Srimati Radharani. I say light, it is not light. It is called Swarup Shakti. And that prema is a gift. So a lot of times it is confusion that everything is all in one. Pure devotee, love of God, rasa, it's all just in one step, one fine day. It's not so. First become a pure devotee of Krishna. Then after some time, we will experience what is love of Krishna. It's not just zoop, everything is one. You are a pure devotee, you have love of Krishna, you are a rasika bhakta. It's all in one wonderful morning after breakfast. It's a progression, gradation, purification, undergoing purification, finally passing the nartha nirriti, the impure habits, practices, all these things of the past, they're in the past now, they're gone. And then we make progress in purity. Then satisfying Krishna with that pure devotion, then one will experience prema, love of God. And when one is highly advanced in love of God, then one can experience rasa, not before. So sometimes it's taken, these things are all like the same. They're not the same. There's progression in purity, and then crossing the nartha nirriti, then purity comes to the stage of bhava, and then prema. And satisfying the Lord in prema bhakti, devotion performed in love, then one can understand what is rasa, what is lila, what is rasa, lila, and all these types of things. So what is Mahaprabhu's love and Mahaprabhu's ecstasy? But it says when he went to Vrindavan, it increased 1,000 times. So his day-to-day normal ecstatic love for Krishna is not even reachable directly by a human being. And what to speak of when he went to Vrindavan. Ten thousand times more. And this is not just figuratively speaking, you see. Probably, and Mahaprabhu says that actually, he comes back and he says, actually I have not even a drop of love for Krishna. I have no love for Krishna. Rather, my life is lived out like the life of an insect. He compares himself to an insect, because an insect is of no consequence in God's creation, more or less. It has no contribution to make in human society. It has nothing to contribute to the Almighty. Although in the greater scheme it plays an insignificant role in ecology and so forth. But this is of no consequence to the Supreme Lord. So he compares, without love of Krishna, he says, I live my life like an insect. That if you want to read the chapter for the most inspiration, for the deepest inspiration and love of God, read Madhya Leela chapter 2. It's called The Lord's Manifestation of Ecstasy. Practically there's no purport in that chapter. Few small purports are there. One can just read the verses and it's not even necessary to discuss them or comment about them. Just Mahaprabhu is revealing his heart to Srupa Damodar, to Govinda and Ramananda Roy, and this has been passed down to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and he is writing. And these are very high things, and if we just read those verses, then the transcendental nature of those verses will purify our heart and help to establish us in what are the feelings of love of God. We first take bath in hearing about these things. And that will begin to purify us and qualify us and prepare us in that way. So he felt very insignificant. But when in his last 12 years, everything increased even beyond that. Oh, what I wanted to mention was, materially, probably, oh, and he says it also, that's right. You could not experience this love of Krishna and Mahaprabhu. You know why? It would kill you instantly. You could not sustain the experience of love of Krishna directly, as Mahaprabhu did it. Mahaprabhu experienced it. You can die from overeating, even. You can die from drinking too much water. This mortal life is very fragile. There's air everywhere, but if you leave the air 3 minutes, you're gone. Or less, for some people. An old man, an old woman, or a child, less than maybe 1 minute, no air, they're gone. They cannot sustain anything. Well, those are naturally harsh things. No air, no food, and so, right? But there have been plenty of people. They have, it's not necessary to mention it, but they die while enjoying the senses in this material world, especially old people. They go for the dance party and fall right over on the floor. They just have so much fun, it kills them on the spot. So, for example, it is said that Mahaprabhu sometimes, in his ecstasy of love of Krishna, his teeth would so much and would grind so much, they would actually stick a cloth in his mouth. Otherwise he would just crush his own teeth. But that is not controllable. Like there's one bogey in Vrindavan. He professes to be a great devotee of Radharani. He's an old Mayavadi who came to bhakti without the bhakta. Became a sahajya. It's like Phil Prabhupada writes in one of his purports that the Mayavadis, if they come to bhakti without the help of a pure devotee, they come to sahajyism and not bhakti. So this one man in Vrindavan, he claims to have Radha Bhav. And if he hears the name of Radharani, Srimati Radharani, Sri Radhika, different things, names of Radharani, then he falls down on his bed. And his head goes on a nice silk pillow. And then he's some shaking there on his bed. This is his bhava. Well, Mahaprabhu, when he would fall into this, into his bhava, it was not on a nice, comfortable couch with a nice silk pillow. He would just fall wherever he was. And this was very disturbing for the devotees, and they would always worry, if he's ever alone, he may hurt himself. You see, the devotees were very concerned. Like, once he fell down in the ocean, and was gone for hours, taken away by the ocean and quarry. This was a great disturbance for the devotees. Many times when he fell, devotees like Lord Nityananda and others, they would jump to the ground and they would catch his head just before it would hit the stones or hit the dirt or hit the marble floor or anything like that. Mahaprabhu, when he fainted, he did not, well, where's my silk pillow? He just fainted. If he would hit the ground, maybe his teeth would break. They would come in his room and he would be rubbing his head on the wall. Like sometimes when something's wrong for you, you go, oh, no, no, and you shake your head. You rub your head. What to do? But can you imagine when the emotion is so intense, due to love, that you are rubbing your head on the wall until blood is coming. And you're not even conscious of that. These were just some of the small things. In this chapter, Madhyalila, chapter 2, there will describe how Mahaprabhu's joints used to get dislocated. You ever dislocate a finger? How painful that is? Or dislocate a shoulder or an elbow? That is such a painful thing. But in ecstasy of love of Krishna, all his joints used to dislocate at once by 6 to 8 inches. Not just dislocated by this much. Dislocate by 6 or 8 inches. He would be found perspiring blood on his forehead. So intense. Actually, if we experienced that, we would die. And he said that also sometimes is like a person gets a little down, their face gets a little blackish. They look a little bit like this. Mahaprabhu would become so withdrawn sometimes that his arms would disappear. They would just go inside his body. They would just contract. Your arm goes inside your body, you're dead. You cannot experience it. These things are mentioned, not just in Mahaprabhu's Leela, but these things are mentioned in different places in the Shastra. What the body will experience when the soul experiences love of God. And some of them are mild, of course. There's trembling, shaking, faltering of the voice, crying, sweating, hair standing on end, shivering, all these. They're mild in the extreme. They are very severe. And a human being could not live through that experience. The humans that we are. Mahaprabhu himself has a transcendental body. And he is ready for that higher experience. And until we have a transcendental body, we're not fit for that higher experience. But the perfection of our life is to serve the higher echelon, the higher group, the higher category of devotees, and to serve the Supreme Lord. And when we are fit for eternal life, then we will get eternal life after passing away from this mortal world. But not before. This material world is a very dangerous place. For our business is not to try to taste nectar. Our business is to try to prepare ourselves to drink unlimited nectar. Don't worry about getting a little taste. Prepare yourself, because when the dam opens, you have to be fully prepared for that experience. And if we are not, if you're not prepared, you'll retreat and run away. If you're only prepared to taste a little, when the big experience comes, you'll retreat and run away. And here we are in training for that. What is that training? We will come to know in the course of our life, whether we are men or women, in the renounced order of life, householders, whatever our position is, that full surrender, and only full surrender, is the path of satisfying Krishna. There is no, I'll keep this much for myself. However small that is, ultimately, it must be sacrificed for Krishna's pleasure. Nothing short of everything for Krishna, nothing for me. Because on the last day, that's the question. Are you ready for that? All for Krishna, nothing for you. No, actually, you know, my grandchildren, well, you know, there's my house, well, you know, there's this, well, I have some friends. All these little things we keep inside, then the answer is go to your friends, go to your house, go to your country, go here, go there. Can't go there. Go to all these places. If the answer is yes, I am ready, all for Krishna, none for me, welcome. And we're taken into the land where everything is for Krishna. And no single atom of existence is for itself independently than the, independent of the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So full Krishna consciousness is very, very rare. It sometimes takes the living entity many, many lifetimes of devotional service to actually come to the level of full Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami says, this is almost not possible in one lifetime. So it may be considered that in previous lifetimes we have had our engagement somewhere in the service of the Supreme Lord. In all and one in all is very, very rare. Very, very rare. Mostly it is a thing about progression. Look how many people come to a Sunday feast and go away. They come through, they're there for a few times, or they're just there on a Janmashtami, or in a foreign country, they're in the park seeing a Hare Krishna festival, and they may never ever see that festival again in their life. I know, I give prasadam to so many old people in the West. I made so many life members in ISKCON, in India, and Africa, and places. I know many of them are not living anymore. And they didn't come and fully surrender in that life, but they became a member, they got a book, they did some service. They're gone. Maybe they're gone 10 years back. Maybe they're 10 years old some other place in another country, waiting for the next step when they come a little closer. Or where they are, it's hard to say. But there's some gradual. But when we come to the point of accepting initiation, then it's a little bit the other side. Then it is to be understood, all right, however many lifetimes it took you to get to this point, that's irrelevant. It may have been 10, it may have been 10,000. Now in this life, after Diksha, you should complete that. And you should not linger back in the material world. Therefore, going back to home, back to Godhead, in this lifetime. Do you follow? We should not linger with the things of the past. But in reality, that's not true for everybody also. Many people have initiation, not just now in our little group, since long back. Many people have initiation, and they do not fulfill the opportunity. What does that initiation mean? You become a member of the Achyuta Gotra. You become a member of Krishna's family. You know, I mean, honestly speaking, I hate this terminology, he's gone to his native. What native? It's not your native place. You've gone to your native. It is not, even you've gone to your village. It's not your village. When you tell it, the next time someone says he went to his village, I'm going to say, really? He's staying which place at Govardhan? I want to visit him in his village. Because Govardhan is our village. Govardhan Hill. Members of the Gaudiya Sampradaya in the line of Bhakti Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta, who become the liberated souls, they live eternally in Govardhan. That is your village. Your native place is Braj. Native to that place. But you know, we're like, say there's a foreigner living here from USA, and their child is born here. They give him a USA passport, or whatever country they're from, England or Serbia, wherever they're from, Russia. They don't have to take the passport of India because he's born here, because he belongs to them. So he may live here for so many years, and that place is his motherland. But it may be that actually he's never lived in his motherland, but he has got connection to that motherland that is unquestionable. And when he arrives there, they will even say, oh, young man, young lady, welcome home. Welcome to your country. Well, I'm coming for the first time. Yes, but it is your country. We can tell by the papers that you carry in hand. So the Jiva's story is something like that, different. That is our motherland, that is our native place, that is our original village, and all these things. But we have not resided there yet. But we have got all requirements to be there. Two is, one is all living entities, wherever they are to be found, are the servants of Krishna. First requirement. Second requirement, we are in that particular gotra by initiation, that achyuta gotra. We have come to the family of Krishna in that particular branch. So, you may deal with, even my mother writes me emails sometimes. She's 80 some years old, she writes an email. Same old story, love mom. Same old story goes back, love son. So they think, oh, it's very nice, my son says love son. Right? I don't even know who they are. Now, I've only met them a few times, but you might think you know your parents, but you've never seen them. The Atma within, you don't know who that is. Your mother may be a man in the next life. Depends on many things. So many mothers, so many fathers, so many villages we have been born in. The story is there. To satisfy our hunger, we have eaten a jungle as an elephant. We have eaten 80 kilos a day for 100 years. Still, hunger is paining us. We have, as a pig, we have eaten mountains of stools and filthy things. Still, hunger is paining us. As a fish, we drank so much water. Still, we are thirsty. We are not satisfied in this world. We have been kings. Now, everybody wants to live like a king. Everyone's living in a palace, big bungalow. Where are there millions of people living in this country for thousands of years? Where are all the bungalows? If you go to the ancient cities, your people lived very small. Very small. You go to the old Benares, old Jaipur, old Srirangam. Houses are very, very small. And many people lived inside. Many people lived in the house. Now somebody builds a 6-bedroom bungalow and 3 people live in it. We visited one lady in USA some time back. She had 13,000 square foot house and lived there alone. One person with 13,000 square feet. And no servants even. Just some company that comes and cleans the house once a week or something. So everybody wants to live like a king in this world. Everybody wants to enjoy in this world. Everybody wants to live in a dwarka, like make their dwarka. And so they make their Manhattans, they make their Londons, their Parises, their Delhis, their Bombays. But what goes on in these few places? Simply there are strikes, and buns, and riots, and crime, and there's never even peace and quiet, always noise. One lock is never sufficient. 2 locks, 3 locks on every door. If you go away for the weekend, you have to hire security. I know in Vermont, people go away for 6 months at a time and don't even lock their house. And their houses are full of furniture, and full of televisions and stereos and so many things. Because that area of the country is far, far away from where all this agitation is. But there's nobody there. Everybody wants to live in these cities where there's not even room to breathe. And the air and all these things. For what? For enjoyment. Where's the enjoyment? I fail to see it. It's simply suffering. It's so bad. You don't even get quiet. But they want to try and live in their dwarka, in their mahal. Everybody wants to make a mahal. See? Big mahal. Big mahal means palace. See? Nobody builds a small bungalow. He builds the bungalow as big as his budget will allow. And unfortunately, if it's a small one, that's all his budget allowed. See? Previously, 2 types of buildings were big. The king's building and the temples. And for centuries and centuries in India, everybody else lived in small dwellings. Mostly one story. One story dwellings. Also, if there was ever an earthquake, nothing fell over and killed them. Now there's an earthquake in Gujarat last year. Killed thousands of people because all the houses just fell down. Because they were inadequately rebuilt. So everybody wants to live in this world like a king. One wants to live like a god in this world. But in the end, there's simply so much suffering. And going to the next life, we're still searching for that happiness. When we come to our eternal position as servant of Krishna, then we come to understand the nature of matter and spirit, material happiness, which results in material misery, and spiritual happiness, which is ever increasing. The pleasure experienced in devotion is not a limited thing, but it is an ever increasing experience. And now what we came to this particular point, Mahaprabhu, in the last 12 years, his mood of separation, his love for Krishna and separation, it began to increase more and more. It used to become very intense at night. When everything would quiet down, Mahaprabhu would come to his room, stay in his room. There, when you go to your room, you're there with who? Your thoughts. You go to your room, you're there in your room with your own thoughts. A lot of people won't stay in their room because their thoughts scare them. They got to have a TV playing or radio playing 24 hours a day. So they can't even live with their own thoughts. It is too scary for them. But Mahaprabhu, in living with his thoughts, then this would increase his moods and he would begin to stay up all night. Some devotees would have to be with him. Gradually it came that those moods overflowed into the daytime also. And in the last, for sure you can say in the last 6 to 8 years of Mahaprabhu's life, it was 24 hours a day. He was in this state of great separation in love of God. Mahabhav, Viparlamba Bhav. These two things. Great love for Krishna, the greatest love for Krishna, and with the feelings of separation. At that time, he was distanced from the normal groups of devotees. Even many of his great devotees then did not take his darshan on a daily basis. And he would be then only with his supermost devotees, like Ramananda Roy and Swarupa Damodar, Gadadhar Pandit, and others of that type. They would be with him. Ordinary devotees who loved him, even. And he said, Nityananda Prabhu was not present at that time. Even Nityananda Prabhu. Only the devotees from the section of the Madhurya Bhaktas in Vrindavan, those who were the gopis who had come along with him, they could be his associates and not others. So it was at the beginning of this 12-year period when Haridas, not the very beginning of it, but a particular time along the way in this last 12-year period that Haridas Thakur, he disappeared from the world. One day, Govinda, the personal servant of Mahaprabhu, went in great jubilation to deliver the remnants of Lord Jagannath to Haridas Thakur. When Govinda came to Haridas, he saw that Haridas was lying on his back and was chanting his rounds very slowly. Please rise and take Mahaprasad, said Govinda. Haridas replied, today I shall observe fasting. I have not finished the chanting of my regular number of rounds, so how then can I take prasadam? But you have brought Mahaprasad, so then I cannot neglect it. Saying this, he offered prayers to the Mahaprasadam and took a little portion of it. So this is where the regulation has come for the followers of Mahaprabhu. Don't reject prasadam, particularly if someone comes, some Mahaprasadam Prabhu, I mean real devotee and real Mahaprasad. We shouldn't say no. Maybe we just took prasadam just 2 minutes later. Maybe so many things. We should at least honor the prasadam by a gesture of obeisances, a prayer, a namaskars to the prasadam, and maybe just take a little or a tulsi leaf or something like that. But we should not go, no. How you can say no? Someone says, take Krishna's mercy. No. We are never so foolish. Even if we have got just filled the prasadam up to the level of the nose and are holding our head back so it doesn't come out, and someone says, take Krishna's mercy. Yes, one more piece. We can never say no to Krishna's mercy. You follow? Prasadam means mercy of Bhagavan. So Haridas didn't finish his round, so he didn't want to take his normal quota, but he could not refuse prasadam, so he offered prayers and he took a little portion. The next day, Mahaprabhu went to see Haridas and inquired from him, Haridas, are you well? Haridas offered his obeisances and replied, My body is all right, but my mind and intelligence are not well. Mahaprabhu further inquired, can you ascertain what your disease is? Haridas replied, my disease is that I cannot complete my rounds. Now, Haridas Thakur used to chant around 3 lakhs. 64 rounds is a lakh. And he chanted about 3 lakhs a day. So that's 64. It's 190 or almost 200 rounds of japa, something like that, he chanted daily. And his habit was only after finishing would he take prasad. So when you're having trouble to chant even 4 rounds, please remember Haridas Thakur, who would not even eat unless he chanted 3 lakhs, 3 times 64, 180, 112, 192 rounds is what he chanted before he would take prasad. So then Mahaprabhu said, now that you are now, you have become old, you may reduce the number of your rounds that you chant. You are already liberated, and therefore you need not follow these regulative principles very strictly. And here the word of caution is given. Don't fudge that. Oh, I'm old, I don't have to chant. Oh, I'm liberated, I don't have to chant. I don't have to do this. Don't fudge that line, or you'll find yourself liberated in Maya, not liberated in Goloka. It is very dangerous to consider oneself a liberated soul. Your role in this incarnation is to deliver the people in general. You have sufficiently preached the glories of the holy name to this world. So here, Haridas Thakur, Lord said it, right, he's telling Haridas, yeah. Haridas Thakur is a Namacharya. So some people mistake it that Haridas did not preach. Haridas Thakur also a preacher. He also went on Sankirtan, he went door to door preaching. But his main preaching was by his example. He lived simply, he always was obedient to the order of the Lord. He was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and he always engaged himself in the service of the Lord by chanting the holy name. In most cases, he was not allowed to enter various temples in India at that time. Why? Because he was a Mohammedan. He was a Muslim by birth. And he could not do many other varieties of service. Many of the devotees even, they were Brahmins. When time for prasadam would come, he would not just come and sit down next to all the devotees. Sometimes he would, it depend on the situation and the mood. Mostly they would have to catch him and bring him to take prasadam, because he thought, no, I'm from the lower section of society and my association will contaminate these people. He's generally seen, there's one famous painting, it has all Mahaprabhu's associates and everything. And I went to a temple once in Vrindavan, Gaudiya Math temple, and they were doing a seva where they offered prasadam to the 64 associates of Mahaprabhu, right? So every room was just lines and lines of, there they use that, patal, you know, patal plate. And each devotee's name was written in Bengali in, rice flour, by the plate. And they start in one corner and they just do them all and they fill up all these rooms and it's just going all over the whole mat. By the time I got there, everybody's just at the windows looking inside, And all the devotees, Mahaprabhu's the eternal 64 associates, they're invited, right, to take prasadam. You understand? So then the pujari took me to, we were on the outside, he took me to one window, and then he pointed in there, and there was a small room, there was one plate. All so many plates he was going, this Rupasanatha and Bhoma, he's just showing all these different things. And then it came to this one plate. I said, who's that? He goes, Haridas Thakur. He always took prasadam a little separate. Not because he was proud that he was the acharya, but the opposite, that he would contaminate the others. So he was a preacher of the holy name primarily because he always chanted the holy name and by the example that he showed. What does it mean to be a Vaishnava? In this way he is counted as one of the dearmost close, intimate associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord concluded, "Now therefore please reduce your fixed number of rounds." And then Haridas said, "Please hear my plea. I was born in an inferior family, and my body is most abominable. I always engage in low work. Therefore I am the lowest, most condemned of men. I am unseeable and untouchable, but you have accepted me as your servant. This means that you have delivered me from the hellish condition and raised me to the Vaikuntha platform. My dear Lord, you are the fully independent personality of Godhead. You act by your own free will. You cause the whole world to dance and act as you like. My dear Lord, by your mercy, you have made me dance in many ways." And they say, Haridas Thakur, although he was very austere, but he was a little chubby fellow. He wasn't as lean and thin like a pole. He was a little fatty and jolly in his shape. And so naturally when we see a person like that dance, we always think, oh, this looks nice. Huh? When just that thin and skinny person is dancing, we don't see so much beauty. But when the little chubby person dances, everyone thinks, oh, nice. Huh? So, also sometimes people think of Haridas just like that, sitting in one place, not talking to anybody, just chanting. But he was always on the Sankirtan party. Whenever the opportunity of the Sankirtan was there, he would go out in that Sankirtan party, dancing and chanting. "My dear Lord, by your mercy, you have made me dance in many ways. For example, I was offered the Shraddhapatra that should have been offered to first-class Brahmins. I ate it, though I was born in the family of meat eaters. I have had one desire for a very long time. I think that quite soon, my Lord, you will bring your pastimes in this world to a close. I wish that you not show me your closing chapter. Before that time comes, kindly let my body fall down in your presence. I will catch your lotus feet upon my heart and see your moonlight face. With my tongue I shall chant your holy name, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. That is my desire. Kindly let me give up my body in this way." Haridas was quite older than Mahaprabhu. Advaitacharya was older, Haridas Thakur was older. In double the age means older. He's already in his late 60s, maybe even 70s at this time. Srinivas Pandit in the Panchatattva, always the painting is, looks very young. That must have been a picture of him when he was 20 years old. He was the same age as Mahaprabhu's father. So, about the artists, you don't put your full understanding in what people paint. A lot of things in what people paint are not exactly accurate. For example, in our books, Mahaprabhu is sometimes, here he is, he's running to the Chetak Parvat with a sika. Mahaprabhu didn't have a sika. He was dressed like in this picture. Most of his devotees look like they're from Los Angeles. They are. I recognize them. The gopis, I know that girl. And so forth. But it wasn't like that. Mahaprabhu didn't look like that. Here's Jagannanda throwing the plate. He's got saffron. He's breaking the oil. So Jagannanda's wearing saffron. Jagannanda was not wearing saffron. He was in white dress. So. The artist. We don't just understand by the thing of the artist. But here are the descriptions from authorized scriptures and so forth. Then you get the idea. Once one of these paintings, it got changed. The artist was painting Rupa Sanatha, and they were sitting together reading books. It looked like it just came from Dai Nippon in Hong Kong or China, in the first class, state-of-the-art, Heidelberg printed book. And I told the artist, you see, Prabhu, 500 years ago, they didn't have books like this. The books were individual pieces of paper, and they would generally not be bound at all, or they were tied together in a certain way. So then, I'll show you that picture sometime. He changed that.